joined by Royce Young, DailyThunder.com, ESPN.com. Hello, Royce.
Hello, friends.
Hey,
is this Jim Nance or is this Royce Young?
Well, you know, I pretend to be Jim Nance.
Can I have your tie?
Yeah, can I have a salary? Maybe that's what I need.
No doubt.
Proclaimed this the death of Hero Ball. Last night and the night before, the death of Hero Ball. There was no better heroic ball than LeBron James played in the first quarter last night. Yet it was not enough to get his team past these average, run-of-the-mill Boston Celtics guys, most of them that have been contained to the bench for their careers, that have shown up in this series and are about to take out the great LeBron. Dispute that or just jump in line?
I wouldn't call them average run-of-the-mill players.
I'm like halfway there on death of Hero Ball, Mark. It's like, my guy Ethan Sherwood Strauss had a great stat on game one from the Rockets Warriors. Did you know that Chris Paul and James Harden dribbled more between them than the entire Golden State Warriors roster in game one? Which I found fascinating. That's just unbelievable to me.
Who tracks something like that? Somebody's got way too much time in their hands.
It's called Second Spectrum, my man. That's what it's a tracking service that services all these teams. But
that's a great stat.
Mark, I think you need a mix. Like, I don't think you can just say that you're just completely all the way invested in non-Hero Ball. Because I think some of what the Warriors did in game one was a little bit Hero Ballish. I mean, Kevin Durant is one of the best one-on-one ISO players in the world. Some of it's about where he's catching it, how he's getting into it. But a lot of the buckets that he scored on the Rockets were in one-on-one situations. So, you know, I think that there's kind of a time and a place for it. To me, like what the Rockets are doing, and Mike D'Antoni said it. I mean, that's who they've been all season long. They've built, you know, I think that they're like a tenth of a point behind the Warriors in terms of offensive efficiency. But one of the best offenses the NBA has seen, and they built it by doing what they do. And I think one of the things that determines how successful it's going to be is the matchup that you run into. The Warriors are spectacular in terms of their switchability. Draymond Green gives them a luxury defensively that no other team really has, with the ability to switch 1 through 5 and not give up anything when you make those switches. And really, against an isolation-heavy team, that can hurt you when they can basically just switch on demand. So, you know, I think that, you know, and plus, I'm not ready to write the obituary of LeBron James quite yet. You know, I think that they still have their chances in Cleveland. So, but I do agree. I don't think you just want it 100% hero isolation. Let your best players go to work. You've got to mix it in a little bit. And I think Mike D'Antoni would even say the same thing.
You know, I've seen several opportunities with the Thunder these last few years where somebody punks them and no one steps up. I'm always critical of that. I love what Marcus Smart did last night to J.R. Smith. I love the way Marcus Smart plays. Your thoughts on Marcus Smart's performance, and how much do you think Oklahoma City needs somebody like that?
Yeah, I mean, Marcus Smart is the heart and soul of the Celtics, and that's why, you know, people are kind of fascinated with what's going to happen with him this summer, because I think that he's clearly important. But I don't think the Boston Celtics would be in the position they're in if he had not come back from this injury, because I think that, you know, there are things about Marcus Smart. He's kind of Andre Robertson-ish in a way, that if you look within the numbers and you go within the Celtics fan base, there are people, Dusty, that gripe about the fact that he shoots 36% from the field, that he, you know, he does make his free throws, but, you know, he doesn't necessarily shoot the ball well from three, but the guy is tough, he is rugged, he plays hard. The only thing I don't like about Marcus Smart is he is the supreme flopper of the NBA, but he's honestly turned it into an art. But I do agree. I think that kind of having that guy that takes no nonsense and steps up, every team needs that sort of guy. And, you know, the Warriors got it with Draymond Green. I think the Rockets have it with, like, Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker. I don't know that the Thunder really do have that guy. I mean, they used to have it with Kendrick Perkins, but Steven Adams is not a confrontational player. I think people expect him to be that because he's big and strong, but he's not really that kind of guy. You know, Serge Ibaka used to kind of be that confrontational player, but the Thunder really don't have that guy anymore.
The Cavs look like a team that's ready for the season to be over with. They did in the second half last night. Do you look into this series and how it ends up with what LeBron will do next year? What's going to be his what's going to flip the switch for him to decide, I'm going to come back here, or I'm really going to take seriously opening up this and then looking to go join another team?
Yeah. I mean, I just can't imagine that LeBron's going to just roll it back with this roster. I mean, I just don't see that happening. And just saying, like, look, I think we'll be better. Because, you know, Mark, even though they made the deal midseason and flipped over the whole team the way that they did, it clearly has not been successful. Yeah, they got that little jolt of energy when the trade first went down, but it was kind of back to reality for the Cavs, wasn't it? I mean, they started playing bad defense again. They started, you know, kind of losing their identity offensively. And what's got them to the point they're at, look, the Indiana Pacers had a great season, but they took the Cavs to seven games, and the Pacers, I don't think, were really all that great of a team. But they, you know, they got the Cavs to seven games. And then, you know, the Cavs showed up and just have, you know, a Jedi mind trick played over the Raptors, and LeBron went to a level that's just unreal. But that's what it takes. LeBron has to play at a historically great level, which he is. I mean, the guy's capable of this, but to ask him to do that against top-level competition and a top-level tactician like Brad Stevens is a little bit unreasonable. So all that said, I just don't see LeBron saying, yeah, bring that roster back and let's try it again. To me, I still believe LeBron wants to stay in Cleveland. I think he is looking for every reason he can possibly find to remain in Cleveland. I don't think he came back to Cleveland with an intent to leave it. I think the fact that he has a championship makes it easier to do, but I think he wants to stay. But I think he's going to look at it and say, look, I mean, Jordan Clarkson's getting a DNP, and this guy was supposed to be a trade to help me, you know, get over the hump here. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with who I got. So LeBron's going to be on the phone, and that's to me why I think Paul George is such, you know, the connection between Paul George and LeBron James is going to be really fascinating to play out. That if LeBron can get on the phone and say, hey, PG, what do you want to do? I you're the missing piece. You're what I need. Then that's to me why I've heard everybody kind of throwing out this thing that I said 75%, but that's the reason that I said it on April 30th is because LeBron James has not had that conversation with Paul George yet. And once they start having those conversations, that's when things can change really quickly.
You mean potentially to go to Cleveland, or you mean just get together and say we need to go to LA? Like, are you talking
to go
about
to Cleveland?
Okay,
that would be.
They're
going
to have, space. They'll have space to bring him in.
You know, what I kind of, you know, I'm speculating here, but right. You know, it'd be a Chris Paul situation. You convince Paul George to opt in to the final year of his deal, and you work you basically kind of work a pseudo sign and trade with Kevin Love type deal, which would, you know, that'd work out okay for Oklahoma City, and I think Paul George probably would feel comfortable with the outcome that Oklahoma City gets with that because they get something in return. I mean, people kind of act like Paul George did the Pacers dirty. Paul George did the Pacers a massive favor by telling them that he was not going to be re-signing with them because they were able to get Domantas Sabonis and Victor Oladipo. I could see him kind of maybe doing a similar type of thing with Oklahoma City. But, you know, I just don't think LeBron, you know, he might say, let's go to L.A. together. But, you know, if that doesn't happen, if he wants to stay in Cleveland, it would require some cap gymnastics.
Well, it's also a domino. Here's my thought on it. Because I completely agree. Like, I was watching that game last night. I mean, LeBron James went for 42, 12, and 10, and they lost by 13. If you're LeBron, and here's the tricky part. Philly's only going to continue to keep coming, and Boston doesn't even have potentially their two best players. Okay?
Boston's about to get really good.
So if you're LeBron, you've got to start assessing the situation and say, look, if I really want to keep competing for championships, it's going to have to be somewhere else, or at the very least, this roster is going to have to look drastically different. I mean, that was right. my thought throughout last night.
And the Cavs, you know, they kind of had the ace in the hole, right? And it turns out that it's the eighth overall pick, which is not, you know, the mythological Nets pick did not turn out to be as wonderful as previously thought to be, you know, a top three pick. But the eighth pick has a lot of value in the draft, and there's a lot of talk that it might be Trae Young. And honestly, I think Trae Young playing alongside LeBron James is a tremendous fit. Because I think it solves a lot of the things that would fit well alongside LeBron James. I think it would fit well for Trae, personally, because I think the evolution for him is to become a better off-ball player, a catch-and-shoot guy, somebody, you know, that he just doesn't have to hammer the ball into the hardwood and have it in his hands the entire game. I think that's where Trae Young will become a special NBA player, is that if he can get off the ball some, and playing alongside somebody like LeBron would help that. Now, obviously, the Cavs could trade that pick, and maybe, you know, dangle that out there to try to bring in some other star level player. But nobody else is out there just saying, hey, we're ready to just hand over a star for the eighth overall pick. So it's going to be complicated, and that's why I think that the Cavs have some. They also they're in a little bit of a difficult spot. And I'd also say this, Dusty: LeBron is 34 years old, and I think that he's looking at this, and while he's had a tremendous season at this age in his 15th year, at some point he's going to have to start aging gracefully. And I think that part of the thing the Cavs are going to try to sell to him is saying, look, we might be able to get the guy that's going to kind of transition with you here. And in the similar way that the Spurs did with Tim Duncan and Kawhi Leonard, we're going to bring that guy in that can ease your workload, get you off the ball, not have it to where you have to do so much, and we can kind of lengthen out the trajectory of this team. And I think that's what the Cavs may end up holding on to that pick for that reason.
All right, tonight, what does Houston have to do much different? I just see the Warriors' offense is going to operate just as efficiently as it has. Yeah. And the ISO and the hero ball that the Warriors play is getting guys in matchups that are really good for the team.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, which is Durant with somebody smaller on him and not in a double-team situation, and he's going to score. So is
right.
there? I think that the Warriors are so much the better team in this series that Houston's going to have to play out of their mind to win a game.
Yeah, here's the thing to me, Mark, is that there is a lot of focus on the isolation and the hero ball stuff from game one, and rightfully so. But really, what got the Rockets beat is they played a horrible defensive game, and you can go back and watch it. And I saw some of the tape from the game. James Harden played one of the most pathetic defensive games that I think he's played all season. And, I think it's a little bit overblown that James Harden is a bad defensive player. I think he's actually improved quite a bit in that regard. And there's kind of been a little bit of an unfair narrative built about the guy that he is some bad defensive player. He's not great, but he's not as bad as the YouTube mixes would make him out to be. But he was tragically bad in game one. He lost Klay Thompson so many different times. And look, I think I saw the number. ESPN Stats and Info had it. I think that the Warriors took something like 42 or 52 uncontested shots in game one. You cannot survive against the Golden State Warriors. You can't survive against them just period. But if you're going to give them open, uncontested shots, you have no chance against them. So really, the Rockets and the hero ball and the ISO and all that stuff, they have matchup issues. They can't guard Kevin Durant. Nobody can guard Kevin Durant. But they are not going to get anywhere in this series unless they dig in and force the Warriors to take some contested jumpers. And if they do that and slow the game down and play it more to their pace, I think they still have a chance.
Who are you taking number one if you're Phoenix? Ayton or Doncic?
I like Doncic because of the connection with the new head coach, but I haven't seen the guy play it near enough. Ayton is a monster, and I think he's a can't miss player. He's got a lot of NBA players in him, and I think that you can see some Karl Anthony Towns, you can see some Anthony Davis. There's been some people that have compared him a little bit to Baby Shaq, LSU Shaq, because of the size and athleticism. Ayton, I think, just has untapped potential, Dusty, to be just an incredible player. But Doncic is intriguing, just to pair him alongside Devin Booker, but I think it's got to be Ayton.
Royce, we've enjoyed it. We will talk to you again on Friday. Thanks, sir.
All right. See you guys.
Appreciate
See you, friends.
Royce Young, DailyThunder.com, ESPN.com.